ACCA, the world's most forward-thinking professional accountancy body.
Hello and welcome to our Student Support Podcast. Here we speak to experts, employers, students and members from around the world. They'll be sharing their advice and experience to help you on your ACCA journey and achieve your career goals.
Welcome to this ACCA podcast. I'm Victoria Morgan, editor of Student Accountant, and today we're finding out how you can maximise your chances of success in your career. We'll be chatting to ACCA member Sarfraz Nadir, who has recently written two Student Accountant articles on this very subject. To start, let's hear a bit about your background and your journey to ACCA membership. Welcome, Sarfraz.
Thanks, Victoria. Glad to be here. I got to say, it's a great opportunity for me. You know, never thought anyone would want to hear about my life and my experiences. But I think the way this article has gone has really, really encouraged me. In terms of how I kicked off my career with ACCA, it was more of an accident, if you will, because whilst I was in Pakistan, I was initially thinking of pursuing my local chartered degree. But then somebody said, hey, you know, do your ACCA as well, because you'll have the best of both worlds. You'll have a local degree as well as international qualification. So I pursued both qualifications with gusto. However, as you know, passing the exams for any professional accounting qualification can be a challenge. So it didn't turn out to be a two-horse race. It was a one-horse race, and I ended up passing my local chartered exam first. At that stage, I wasn't really sure whether I should continue and complete my ACCA or not. And to make things more complicated, I received a job offer to move to Saudi Arabia. When I got to Saudi Arabia, however, I found out that it was a market that was still implementing financial reporting and tax reforms, and things like IFRS had not yet been made mandatory there. And I felt that for me to remain in touch with my profession, I needed to continue studying. And that provided me with an excuse to hit the books and continue my ACCA exams from where I last left it. So that's how I picked up my ACCA exams. But there was a challenge, because in Saudi Arabia at that time, ACCA did not have any examination centers. So I would have to travel to neighboring Bahrain to take my papers. However, all that hard work and travel paid off when I was finally able to pass my finals and become a member way back in 2001. ACCA has continued to help me in the most unlikely of ways. So many years later, again, ACCA came to my rescue when I decided to move to Australia, because at that time, Australia was welcoming skilled migrants. And to my surprise, I found out that it's much easier to move to Australia on the back of your ACCA qualification. So again, I took that opportunity, and that's what brought me here. So whilst in Australia, I was able to explore a number of opportunities. And because I have been around the block in terms of the work I've done in finance and accounting and as an auditor, I received a couple of opportunities. Most were project-based. And again, it was a great coincidence for me, because whenever I have worked in any organization, I always kind of volunteer to do something extra, some new work. And we will talk about this later as well. But I just took on a few projects, initially around financial reporting, then went more into fund accounting, unit pricing. And then I even was approached to work around risk and compliance remediation projects. And that's where I am currently. Again, it's a long way from where I started, being an auditor and then being a finance manager, becoming a senior finance person, and then now running projects and working with big project teams in a fairly dynamic environment. So it's really, really exciting. But again, if you were to look at my profile or my resume, you might think I'm a jack of all trades. But then again, look, I think that's what we should be as accountants. We should be flexible and be ready to do whatever we have been trained to do.
That shows so much experience in so many different areas, which will be great to pass on to our listeners. So in your articles, which you can access in the SA app, you mentioned some key things that you think will really help students with their career progression. So let's delve more into these. One of the key points you mentioned is a digital profile. So what is this, and why is it so important for our students to develop one?
That's actually a great question, Victoria. And look, honestly, these days, unless you live in a cave, it's very difficult not to have a digital profile. And at times, you may have a digital profile and not even know about it. These days, it is easy to create a digital profile, but I would say it's much more difficult to control or manage it. And in fact, you have to have a digital profile by default because it's kind of mandatory if you want to avail a number of free services like maps or product reviews or even get news updates. So what do we do about it? I mean, we must accept first and foremost that we do already have a digital profile somewhere. How do we tailor it to our advantage? How do we use it so that it enhances our professional life? The first step to that, in my view, is consistency. And I have touched upon that in my article a little bit. When I say consistency, it is that if we accept that there is a lot of information out there on us, then at least we should be cautious about what we post and be consistent. And by that, it just means we should have the same amount of information across all our profiles. So I'll take examples, say for instance, there's Facebook or there's TikTok, they're more your personal social media channels. And again, a lot of people put content, photos, personal events, even political views. What I would say, guys, is look, it's better to keep the personal side personal, i.e. not as easily accessible. And then when you go to your professional forums or professional profiles, such as LinkedIn or other portals, just be sure that the information you put there does not come into a clash, i.e. if a recruiter or if a prospective employer looked at both of your profiles, would they be able to piece together the same person? Or would they have a bit of a doubt that there's two different personalities operating out there? So that's what I mean when I'm referring to consistency. And I think it's just good to have that sanity check across all your digital profiles. It's there forever. Therefore, let's accept that it's going to be there, but let's just be consistent about it. And I think the second point is common sense. And again, probably I touched upon it even when I was talking to consistency. Just be cautious about what you put there. And look, I can't tell you what to do or what not to do, but the simple rule could be don't put anything that your parents or your boss would not approve of. So I think that's the common sense part. And then the third part about your digital profile, and this is one of my favorites, is about the little things. Now, once you have built a professional profile, it could be on LinkedIn or on some other forum, it's always good to keep updating it regularly for whatever you accomplish. As a student or as someone who's about to begin their careers, everything is digital. You could be working on university papers, be a contributor to a research paper. There could be a course or some courses that you've attended online. And of course, you know, let us not forget the graduation ceremonies. All of these items are now available digitally on some forum or some alumni page. And it's always good to keep collecting it and putting it on your personal profile. Because if you don't do it right now, you will forget 6 months later. At that time, it becomes really difficult to dig those things out. The fourth and final is review, which again is similar to consistency. Again, it's just something straightforward. As we keep subscribing to new digital services and post more content, we sometimes knowingly give consent to services to share more information about us. This could occasionally make its way into our public profile. And if we continue to review it, then we could pick these things up and correct them.
Oh, that's great advice. So I think, yeah, keep on top of it, keep consistent, and make sure you're happy with everything. As you say, if your parents would be happy with you putting it, or your employer. So that's great advice. So another thing you mention in the article is networking, and it's talking about both virtual and in person. So what are your thoughts on this for our students?
So for networking, let me first of all shatter a common misconception. People think it's easy, i.e. how difficult could it be to go and meet someone, right? Well, guys, to me, it's one of the hardest things you could do. Why? Because effective networking demands that you invest your most precious resource. And it's not money, guys. It's time. And that's why if you do it well, effective networking leaves a lasting impression with your target audience. Be they recruiters, they will always appreciate the time and effort you make as a candidate to reach out and make their profile stand out. So even if recruiters cannot acknowledge it to you individually, trust me, it is something they really, really appreciate. And the same can be said, you know, whether you are at some other event, whether it's a professional accountants forum, or whether you are at a university event, the willingness to dedicate your time and your effort, I think it's paramount. And that's why you have to choose carefully. So in terms of networking, my general advice is to always have a plan and act on it. And by that, I mean, you should know why you want to network. Is it because you want to change your job? Is it because you want to work with a particular company or a sector? Do you want to get transferred? Or is it to connect with a potential mentor or to mentor others? Or is it just because you like international financial reporting standards, so you want to be at that event? Whatever it is, whatever the purpose is, if you want to connect with people, you should know why you want to do it, and then you stick to that plan. And there are a few kind of steps in it. The first is to do your research. Given today's time poor environment, if you attend an event where the subject matter is close to your heart, chances are you will build better contacts there. No point attending an IFRS event if you are more inclined towards tax. You would get bored, and the boredom will be reflected in how you interact with others, and it would result in a forgettable experience for both you and the people there. On digital networking, that requires even more time than in person. It's very easy to just ping someone. It's very easy to email someone, but it doesn't work that way. That's because in digital networking, you have to convince someone who's probably never even met you to either take your call or to respond to your email or message. It requires persistence. And that's why whenever I'm trying to network digitally, then I have to use a multi-pronged approach. If it's a job that I care about, I will message the recruiter. I will try and email them. I will try and call them. They don't take the call, I will leave a message. And again, a similar approach would be required if you want to digitally reach out to any other contact. It just requires more time and more person, because if you're trying to reach out to a particular person, chances are a lot of other people also want to do the same. And you need to distinguish yourself at times, maybe by even being a pest, but a nice pest.
That's great advice. Thank you. So, let's say you're in work. In the article, you talk about possibly offering to take on more responsibility where possible and giving back. And all of these are really good for career success. Would you be able to explain more about how our students can think about this when they're in a job?
Be glad to. But let's break it into two parts. The first is about taking responsibility, and the second is giving back. When I say taking more responsibility, it's really with an intent to distinguish yourself at work. Let's face it, today's job market, it's ultra competitive. We have university graduates coming out, we have accounting graduates, everyone much brighter, much brighter than I would say even 20 years ago. And they have the skills that are far more superior because, you know, the teaching methods are better, everything is better. Therefore, it is much more competitive. And taking on more responsibility is just a way to stand out. I mean, it's just someone raising their hands. It could be volunteering something within your team or within your class, you know, helping out your teacher. Or if you're in a job, if your boss looks stressed, you can just say, hey, is there something I can help you with? Or it could be in response to a specific request, like a colleague is going on long-term leave and somebody needs to pick up the workload while they're gone. Again, it could be an opportunity for you to raise your hand. And look, I'm not saying taking on more responsibility is a guarantee of success, but it will get you noticed. And again, it is something you have to commit to. And I have mentioned this in my article. You can't do it halfway. Think it through. And if the opportunity presents, you have to take that leap. But once you've taken the leap, then you're in it for the long haul. what are the advantages of taking more responsibility? Well, the first thing is you could find your true calling. I can give countless examples of colleagues, people who worked in my teams, who started off as supply chain professionals. And they continued to move around from supply chain role to supply chain role until one fine day, they were offered an HR role within the same organization. And guess what? They realized that they are an amazing people's person. They never look back. It could be a great opportunity. You know, you could be opening up yourself to a new skill set, something you didn't know that you could achieve. I'm not saying leave accounting, but if you are into financial reporting and you had the opportunity to work in, say, treasury, you might find that you enjoy treasury a lot. And that could be a building block for the next steps in your career. The other thing about taking more responsibility is the ability to look at a situation with fresh eyes. Now, if you have volunteered to do someone else's job, once you are seated in that role, you will be able to look at that position in a completely new perspective because you've not done it before. The advantage of that is at times you can pick up opportunities to improve things or you can learn things. And these things may not have caught the attention of your predecessors simply because they've been doing it for so long. So again, I do encourage people to take on more responsibility because I think it results in low-hanging fruit that are simply the result of being you in that position, having never done that role before. The second part is giving back. Now, giving back sounds really good and noble, and we've seen all these billionaires who keep talking about the giving pledge and giving back. And I think it's important to distinguish that we don't want to start giving back when we are the CEOs. This is something that we can do today. So if you're a student in year two, and if you have a little bit of time, I mean, you could help students in year one. Similarly, if you've started your career and you've just had an entry-level job, you could look at some people in your neighborhood or, you know, some friends who were a couple of years junior to you, friends of your brother, sister, who are thinking of pursuing the same career. And they might not know where to go. You may think you're not the right person to advise them, but in their eyes, that might not be the case. A few words from you, or maybe a 1 hour session in which you could tell them the pros and cons of the role that you're playing, or the job that you're doing, could make the world of difference to help guide them or steer them towards better career choices, better lives. Therefore, giving back can be pretty grassroots. It doesn't have to wait. It doesn't have to be donations and have university wings in your name. I think the most effective giving back is actually the giving back that we do on a day-to-day basis, whether it's mentoring someone, responding to queries or guidance. And again, once you rise in the organization, you could become a mentor to someone. You could have a more formal role in nurturing someone's career. So the two aspects about taking on more responsibility and giving back are not only excellent ways to help others, they are also an indirect way to help yourself because A, it gets you noticed, but B, not everyone gives back. That will again engender a huge amount of positive goodwill for you at whatever stage you are in your career or even before your career. So I would say, look, depending on how much load you can take and how much time you have, just start doing this.
That's great. And I think also they're quite achievable steps. You're not saying to make big leaps into saying, I'm going to take on these big, huge projects. They're little steps that you can do at any stage in your career, which I think is really interesting. And hopefully our students will take some of these on board. So we're running out of time. But finally, what are your three top pieces of advice for career success?
Oh, yes. So I have three fairly unconventional pieces of advice. The first is, positivity and optimism are contagious. Please use them as much as you can. Trust me, there's all talk of doom and gloom and poor financial results, but always try and find the positive in a situation because there generally is. Employ humor if you can. Otherwise, just staying positive will have such a huge impact on you and the people around you. So that's one. Second, be prepared for change, because it's inevitable. Whether it's a change in curriculum, a new teacher, more homework, more assignments, or the fact that your company is laying off people or the company has been acquired, if you're prepared for change, then you will adapt to it faster and accept it faster. Those who don't will be left behind. Finally, hard work is good, but do not let it consume you. You have your whole life ahead of you, whole career ahead of you. A happy and healthy worker or student is the best worker or student. So make time for yourself and your loved ones.
Well, that's wonderful tips. Thanks for your insight throughout this podcast. It's been really, really interesting. So we'll finish up now. Thank you, Sarfraz, and thank you everyone for listening.
Glad to be here.
Why not be part of the conversation? Let us know what you'd like to hear discussed in future podcasts by contacting the email address in the description of this episode. We look forward to hearing from you.
This podcast was brought to you by ACCA. Find out how we think ahead at accaglobal.com.